Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Friday is National Healthcare Decision Day, and today we're talking about advanced care planning. Joining us are Ellen Kosky and Benjamin Adams. Ellen's the executive director of the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership. Ellen, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Ben Adams is an attorney with McCarty Law in Appleton. He specializes in elder law. And Ben, great to have you with us as well.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having Ellen and I back.
Well, it's great to have you both back. And as you listen to these two experts, I hope you'll join in with your questions. How will your medical decisions be made if you're not able to speak for yourself? Have advanced directive documents helped you when you or a loved one couldn't make decisions? Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Ellen, let's start with you. Why is it important to have a day designated to making advanced healthcare decisions?
That's a great question. April 16th is a unique day. This is generally, in other years, the day after tax day. And as Benjamin Franklin so famously said, there's nothing more certain in life than death and taxes. And so National Healthcare Decisions Day, April 16th, is a national movement to encourage people of all ages to share their personal wishes with their family and their loved ones, really anybody who cares, as well as their healthcare teams, and for healthcare teams and healthcare facilities to respect those wishes. And so it aligns really well with the mission and the work of the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership, where we're working to normalize these conversations because we just never know when we're going to need them.
Yeah, for sure. Is there any significance to the date, April 16th?
It being the day after tax day. So the day after April 15th is normal. And I know since tax days moved this year, I mean, I like to think of every day as National Healthcare Decisions Day. So it doesn't have to be on that day. It can be any day that, you are so inclined to start these conversations and share your wishes.
And what kinds of decisions are we looking at here?
Yeah, so really important in our state is naming your healthcare agent. So this would be done through the Power of Attorney for Healthcare document. So naming a person that you trust to speak for you if you were not able to speak for yourself. So adults in Wisconsin, we're able to direct our own healthcare, make decisions of what we want and we don't want. But if we lose that ability to direct that care, say, for example, we get really sick or we're in a coma or we get into an accident, we have the right to name somebody who will step in and speak for us and make those decisions. Oftentimes people think, oh, well, that'll just be my next of kin. That'll be my spouse. That'll be my partner. Not in Wisconsin. We are not a next of kin state for these decisions. So there's no automatic decision maker. So it's really on us as adults to make that decision. So I think that's the very first decision is, who do you trust to speak for you? And have you completed that legal document? That's really important to give them that control. And then also included in that document is, different authorities that you would allow that person to make decisions about. And they're pretty important decisions, including things like whether or not, it would be okay to be admitted to a nursing home, if physically or financially that would be needed. Another decision that you or another thing that you are allowing or not allowing your agent to make decisions about is feeding tubes. And those are really important. Those could really depend on whether or not a life is ended or not. And then finally, in Wisconsin, women who are of childbearing age or who could be pregnant have the ability to make the decision if they want their healthcare agent to speak for them if they were to be pregnant or not, so it's really back on the individual to guide this in advance, but it's kind of complicated and it can be difficult to think about. So people, it's tough. And so that's why we're here to help with that.
Yeah, and speaking of guides, Ben, can you talk about the guide the Wisconsin Bar Association has available to help families with these decisions?
Sure. Thanks, Larry. Yes, the State Bar Association of Wisconsin has a free planning guide for making healthcare directives. It's called A Gift to Your Family, and I notice you have a link to that document in English and in Spanish posted on the website for your show. And from today through, I think it's April 22nd, the State Bar is making the download of this guide free to anybody who wants to go on their website and get a copy. And then they could review this. It has wonderful questions and issues and topics that you should discuss with the people that you're thinking about naming as your agent. It talks about the different types of healthcare directives that a person could complete in Wisconsin. And it talks about what are the qualities that you might want to think about in the person you are going to name to be your decision maker. So for somebody who doesn't really have a clue about what this is about, starting by downloading that guidebook or getting a copy of it would really give them what they need to get the process started and also to successfully complete it. And this book was originally, Larry, put together as a joint effort by the State Bar of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Medical Society, and the Wisconsin Hospitals Association. So it was a collaboration between the medical folks and the legal folks. And I think we're now in our eighth printing or eighth edition of this document. And I know there are over 500,000 copies that have been distributed over the years.
Yeah, it's a great piece. I've got it in front of me right now online, and I'm wondering. Some people may be wondering at what age should they fill out these forms.
My suggestion is that when somebody is about to turn 18, when they're going to be legally an adult in Wisconsin, that's the time at which they should be talking about this, or their parents or a loved one should be bringing it up to them. And once somebody is 18, that's when they can legally sign the document. These don't, Larry, have to be signed in front of a notary public like some legal documents, but they do have to be signed in the presence of two adult impartial witnesses who also then sign and date the document. That's what's required to make them legal. Another issue about these documents is when I signed mine in front of my witnesses, I appointed my wife to be my primary agent, but she does not yet have that authority as long as I can make my own decisions for myself. So this type of document is usually a two-stage document where you sign it and get it witnessed, and it's legal, but it's not in effect yet, and then it has to be put into effect when the medical professionals determine that I can no longer make my decisions or communicate those decisions.
And, you know, somebody 18 years old fills this out. I mean, over time, well, actually for any age, over time things change. But you can, I'm sure, update your advanced directives.
Yes, you not only can, but you should. And certainly as your health concerns change. And you're right, Larry, somebody who's in their teens or early 20s and in great health is going to look at this with a different eye towards it than somebody who's like me getting ready to retire fairly soon, or somebody that has a progressive health issue that they are living with. So as your wishes change, it's really a good idea to update this document. And you cannot go back to the previously signed one and just make some edits to it. The better solution is just get a current document and complete it to state the wishes and the agents that you want to name in the future. And if you get divorced, this document is canceled by the divorce. If you had named your spouse, your now ex-spouse, as your agent. So anybody who's been through a divorce and has not done a new document would need to get one of these completed now.
Hmm. Let's take a call.
I would add that.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Ellen.
It's okay. Yeah, I would echo that any major life transition is a great opportunity to review and update. So as Ben said, absolutely, starting at age 18, and for most people at that point, that may be a parent or a close, you know, friend or another family member who they would wish to speak for them. But maybe, you know, they enter into a serious relationship. Maybe they get married or have a partnership. That agent, the person that they would want to speak for them, may change. And so that's a great opportunity that those documents need to be updated. Maybe, as Ben said, you know, through a transition, maybe the divorce happens. Those documents need to be updated. As people get older, they're considering retirement, or maybe they're considering downsizing, moving into a senior apartment or an assisted living. Those documents need to be updated. Those are major life changes where healthcare wishes may also change at that point, and just a great opportunity to do that. And oftentimes I speak with people who say, oh, yeah, I got that done, or I did that with my lawyer. And I say, okay, when did you do it? And what's changed in your life since then? And I think all of us can look back at the last year and say, wow, yeah, we've learned a lot. Maybe we want to take a look at our documents and update them too. So I just wanted to add that in there.
Yeah, it's a good addition. Thanks for bringing that in, Ellen. Vicki in Mequon has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Vicki.
Hi, I have two sons, and I had them fill out a healthcare directive, a living will, and a will when they were turned 18. They now, being millennials, they move around quite a bit. They're now located in Illinois. We've never updated those documents when they've moved to other states. Are those documents valid, or do they need to fill out new forms in each state that they end up moving to?
Interesting.
That's an excellent question, Vicki, and thanks for bringing it up. I'm sure a lot of people have the same question. If those documents are valid in the state in which they were signed or executed, then they should be honored at least to a great extent in any other state. But if they're in another state and they're permanently there, you know, as opposed to going to school there or something like that, then once you begin to reside permanently in another state, it's a good idea to check around and see if some of these documents should be updated. But they should be valid, and especially since Wisconsin has some additional requirements in our healthcare document statute. That many other states do not require. I always say, if you're valid in Wisconsin, it certainly should allow your decision maker to make whatever choices are necessary in the next state. It's a little different if you had done your documents in Illinois and then you live in Wisconsin and you need to be placed in a long-term care facility, for example. The power of attorney from Illinois may not be adequate to allow that to be done without going through the court system here. But the will and the financial power of attorney, you know, certainly should be honored in the other state. Although, again, as time passes, periodically, it's a good idea to visit with an attorney and talk about whether you should update those documents too.
Vicki, thank you. Doug in Mount Horeb has a related question, I believe. Doug, hi.
Hi, great program. My question is there a nonprofit organization that I've been told exists, but I don't know the name of it, that's why I'm calling, that can stand in and act as a healthcare power of attorney for you when you've kind of aged out on the power of attorneys that you named? Where as we're getting older, the people that we've named are becoming unable to act on our behalf or have passed away or have their own problems. And we're in a situation now where the folks that we've named are probably not going to be available to act on our behalf. And I'm told that there is some kind of an organization that is even a sponsor, Wisconsin Public Radio, but I don't know who it is, that you can name in that situation.
That's another great question, Doug. Thanks for bringing it up. Unfortunately, the answer is no, at least in my opinion, as a lawyer who's looked into this somewhat. The Wisconsin Healthcare Power of Attorney statute talks about naming a person as your agent. It doesn't talk about naming an entity like an association or a corporation. So while on the one hand, there are numerous companies that are trust companies, and they're able to provide financial services or trust management or act as your durable financial power of attorney in many cases, those same entities are not authorized, at least according to me, in my interpretation of Wisconsin law, to act as your medical decision maker. So I think what you would have to do is if you, there are some public guardianship or private guardianship agencies that act as legal guardian and as a guardian for healthcare decisions for people, but that's for somebody who's been determined by a court to be incompetent. So if you want to voluntarily name an agent, if you could talk to one of those guardianship agencies and ask them, could one of your employees as an individual serve as my medical decision maker? Possibly that could work, but you're really needing to name an individual.
All right. There you go, Doug. Thank you very much for calling. Visiting today about advanced health care planning with our two guests, Attorney Ben Adams with the McCarty Law Office in Appleton, Ellen Koski, Executive Director of Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership. Join in with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@WPR.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Visiting about advanced care health planning with our two guests, Ben Adams, attorney with McCarty Law in Appleton. He specializes in elder law. Ellen Koski, executive director of the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership. What advanced care planning have you done? Has planning ahead helped you in a health care situation? What questions do you have about advanced care planning? Give a call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@WPR.org. Ellen, can you talk about the Conversation Project?
Yeah, the Conversation Project is a really cool initiative. It's a national program really encouraging people and providing resources and tools to have these conversations. So while in Wisconsin, we really lead with the conversation about the document because those legal documents are especially important in our state, but the conversation that comes with it is what brings that document to life. And so I lean on the Conversation Project a lot because they have really great, easy-to-use resources and workbooks and tools that can be used in different situations to help people get more confident and comfortable with this topic and with the type of decisions and that they may have to make for themselves or to communicate to their loved ones, but also to how you can share your wishes with your loved ones. I've oftentimes just talked with people who say, I'm comfortable with it. I feel really confident about what I want. But when I bring it up to my adult children, they say, no, I don't want to talk about it. Or that makes me depressed, or that makes me sad, or, they don't want to talk about it. And so the Conversation Project's resources can really help with that to lead into those conversations and to share the important information that may come up. And, the role of that healthcare agent, should they need to step in if I lost the ability to speak for myself, for my healthcare agent to step in, it's a big job. And so what we really want to do is make sure that those people are prepared. They have all the information they need because at that point they are your voice and we want them to be confident that they're speaking for you. And so I think that the Conversation Project's resources and tools and actually National Healthcare Decisions Day is now sort of sitting within the Conversation Project because that's what it is. It's about starting these conversations and supporting people in whatever direction they may go. And I think really with all of this, practice makes perfect. The more opportunity we have to kind of lean in and get a little uncomfortable and say, in this situation, this is what I would want. How about you? And kind of to also make it a two-way conversation, the better it's going to be and the easier it'll be when and if there's a serious illness diagnosis or if somebody's health is starting to decline, you can lean back on these conversations and these experiences and say, well, remember when we were all, sitting around the campfire and talking, and dad said this, like, we need to use that moving forward, and kind of to those conversations are what really, you know, come in and as helpful when push comes to shove in the moment.
Hmm. Jim in Appleton has a question for us. Let's go there. Hi, Jim.
Hi, good morning. And I may be a bit confused on this. I recently got some papers from ThetaCare in Appleton advising on advance directive. And my question is, can the person you name as the decision maker, I'm not sure what that is, that called the agent, can that person be a child or a spouse who benefits from your estate? There is a statement that a witnesses cannot be a family member, but can the agent be a family member, for example, my son or daughter?
Absolutely. That's a great point, and there often is confusion about who can be a witness and can my agents be my witness, as an example. So your witnesses have to be independent adults. So they can't be your in-laws. They can't be your children or your blood relatives or the spouse of a blood relative, but they could be your friends or your neighbors. And your witnesses have to sit with you and stand with you and watch you sign the document. So I can't, Larry, witness my document today and have you and Jill come over tomorrow and you sign it tomorrow as my witnesses. That's not legal witnessing, so my document would be invalid. But you can absolutely appoint a spouse or a child or an in-law to be your healthcare decision maker agent. And agent is the term that we generally use for that. So that's absolutely okay. And normally in these documents, we want to name a series of people. The state form generally has only two spots. So you can name a primary and a secondary unless you go out to and create a number three spot in the margin, which would be okay. The documents, there are other style of documents that are offered either through the local healthcare systems or through the Honoring Choices Program, which is housed at the Wisconsin Medical Society. And a lot of those documents give you a first choice, a second choice, and also a third choice of agent, at least a place to put those people into the document. Larry, we want people to be aware of a document you've got hosted on your webpage called Advanced Care Planning Resources in Wisconsin 2021 that Ellen put together. It's got a lot of links and information about places that people can get not only the documents but can access really good advice and support in trying to get these things discussed and understood and then completed.
Yeah, and just go to ideas at WPR.org/Larry, and you're going to find all the links to the Conversation Project as well. So, Jim, I thank you very much for that question. Jill in Rhinelander will give you a chance. Hi, Jill.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just have a question. How can a person go about getting a wristband or a medallion or something for do not resuscitate if you do not have a regular doctor?
Wow, that's a good question, Jill.
Yeah.
Let me tell you what I would tell you and tell other people. You know, what Jill's referring to is a do not resuscitate order, which is a medical order. It's not an advance directive. But oddly enough, the statute regarding do not resuscitate orders and that allows it or enables that to happen is actually located within the advance directive statute sections of Wisconsin law. At any rate, it's a medical order from a physician. So in order for you to obtain a do not resuscitate order, you're going to need to have that issued by a physician. And I suspect that a physician is going to want to have a meeting with you and you know, evaluate you, because in order to have a do not resuscitate order on file as a medical order, you don't have to be terminally ill, but you have to be somebody that if resuscitation occurred after a healthcare event where you stopped breathing or your heart stopped functioning, basically you need a medical determination that said resuscitation is not going to bring you back to a healthy state of life. And again, that's not a legal determination. It's a determination made by a physician. So if you get the booklet on the Gift to Your Family booklet that we've got on Larry's website, that's free from the state bar for the next week or so. There is a section in there on do not resuscitate orders, but you're going to have to, at least for the time being, to get that order in place, you'd have to form a relationship with a medical doctor.
Jill, thank you very much for calling. You can join in, too, with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Carol in Kenosha, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Carol.
Hi. Some of what I'm concerned about was just answered, but I'm 83 years old and I have no one, absolutely no one. I do not have a church. I do not have an organization, all of these questions you might ask. And what I don't understand with this, the language in this directive, is that if I sign this with my directive, why do I have to have a different person there to make decisions for me? I'm making my decisions by signing this. Why is someone else going to take over and make decisions for me?
Hmm. Yeah. Carol, that's a great, great question. And I think that, we take the approach, especially with naming that power of attorney or the healthcare agent that we've kind of talked mostly about, as you know, they're the ones that will bring the color to the gray situation, right? We can't. It's really hard to for us to write down our wishes in every single scenario, and so to have that person to make those decisions or to be able to reflect on your wishes and then make that decision, that's kind of our default and go-to. But I understand. We work with quite a few people who don't have people in their life that they would trust to make those decisions. And so the document and where we would really guide you to is a document called the Declaration to Providers, or, which really is outlining your wishes and what it is that you would want in a situation where, you were at the end of your life or you had a terminal illness. What I would really suggest is making time and making space and sitting down with your healthcare professional, your provider, your doctor, nurse practitioner, and having these really robust conversations, if at all possible, about your wishes, your values, the scenarios that you have going through your head or that you've been through, because they can use their notes in the medical record to guide decisions should something happen where you're not able to make decisions. They can use that relationship, that they've established with you, or what you have, anything that you have written down should be on file with your doctor also, so they can use that. Ultimately, if it came down to a withdrawal of treatment situation, that may be, something that they may not be able to make that final decision. And that's where our state, puts that onus back on the agent. But I would highly suggest, if you haven't already, to really put priority into that relationship with your provider, because that could really help, and hopefully help in your you to have confidence should something happen to you anytime soon.
Yeah. Carol, thank you very much. Yeah, go ahead, Ben.
I would add a little bit to what Ellen said. So you probably want to fill out or complete, instead of an advanced directive, healthcare power of attorney, where you normally would name an agent. You would want to complete, as Ellen was saying, a declaration to physicians, which is known as a living will here in Wisconsin. And that one doesn't appoint an agent, but the problem with the declaration of physicians is it only deals with being in a persistent vegetative state or needing certain life sustaining measures. But that would be helpful to have in place. Another thing to look into would be seeing whether your physician would agree that you qualify and deciding whether you want a do not resuscitate order, so that if you did get into a situation where you stopped breathing, they don't have to do resuscitation on you. And I guess, you know, I can't give you any more solution to your dilemma, because Wisconsin law, you know, requires a patient, a medical patient, to either give an affirmative consent to receiving treatment, or be able to give a knowledgeable, informed, you know, refusal to undergo treatment when you're faced with treatment. And if you're unable to speak for yourself at that point, the law requires that an agent be appointed to do that. And Carol and everybody here in Wisconsin should understand that if we aren't in a position where we've created that voluntary agent relationship in advance, then the law does have a solution, or what it'll impose as a solution, and that would be a court process in what's called a guardianship, where a determination of incompetency would be made, and then either a family or a non-family member or agency would appoint it as your legal guardian to basically be authorized to make financial decisions and management for you, and medical, even end-of-life decisions, to the extent allowed under the law. Not the way you want to go if you can help it.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah. Exactly. And Carol, I know that anybody else who's on the call, there are community groups that are affiliated with the county ADRC, the Aging and Disability Resource Center, kind of sporadically throughout the state. There are groups like ours that are coming up, and I believe Kenosha County does have a group of folks that are working on supporting community members through this process. So if you're looking for help, our document up on the Larry Mueller Show website gives some sort of places to start. But I would also, if you live in a county that you're comfortable and you use the ADRC, give them a call and ask about all the other resources too, because I know that there are more coming up, and so many folks are willing to help and kind of break down these the challenges that.
Whoops. I think we may have temporarily lost Ellen there.
And Larry, Ellen and viewers or listeners, I guess we're not being viewed, but Ellen referred to the ADRC, which is the Aging and Disability Resource Center, and each county has that entity existing, and it's a great place to call to be directed to local resources and support.
Carol, thanks again. Mary in Chippewa Falls, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I just wanted to comment about the having people prepare things. I must say my parents did exactly that, and I remember I was about 25 or 30, and I kept going, no, Mom, that's okay. I don't want to talk about it. And I tell you what, when she died, and then my dad, and then my uncle, who was a priest, all those things were taken care of. I couldn't thank them enough, because I could enjoy the family that was around instead of having the funeral director call and say dot dot dot. He had everything, and I tell you what, I can't thank them enough for doing this. So when your parents start saying things like that, I advise the kids to smile and say, okay, thanks, Mom and Dad.
Well, Ellen, you probably agree with that.
I'm can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, yes, absolutely. I thank you so much, Mary, for sharing. And this life is a journey, right? And there's few surprises, but oftentimes people are surprised at end of life, and we panic, and we don't know what to do. And so anytime that we can, have these conversations, get that preparation, so whether it be, before death healthcare planning or after death planning, even just talking about values and what's important and writing things down, you know, not even, you know, or, you know, paying for things is really nice, but if that's not able to be happening, just talking about and giving that direction, gosh, what a, you know, a hand on your shoulder through that difficult time and through that grief process, and how much that can help. And we know that people who complete their advanced directives, or when we have patients at the end of their life, if they have an advanced directive, if their wishes are followed, family members followed 6 to 12 months later are a lot less likely to have, you know, higher levels of depression. It just, it makes that hard situation a little bit easier. It helps people, you know, continue their journey through life, knowing that the right decisions were made. So,
yeah.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Mary. Anne wondered about the difference between a power of attorney and a conservator. Is the court a further protection in the case of a conservator? Maybe more
well,
objective?
That brings, yeah, Larry, that's a good question. And it brings up the difficulty that you have with terminology when you're talking about a lot of these concepts, because Wisconsin law does have a concept called a conservator, but it has nothing to do with medical decision making. It's if I'm a person who might be taken advantage of, but I'm competent, I can go to the court and have the judge appoint Ellen as my conservator, because I know that otherwise people will take advantage of me, and then I ask the judge voluntarily to put Ellen in charge of my finances. And yet, if you're in Michigan, a conservator means a legal guardian, what we call a legal guardian. So when we talk about guardianships, as I did a little earlier, we're talking about a judge determining that I'm incompetent and appointing somebody to make my financial and possibly also my medical decisions for me. In Michigan, they call that a conservatorship. So, and I mentioned the term living will a little while ago. A lot of states refer to a healthcare power of attorney document where I appoint an agent as a living will. But in Wisconsin, a living will does not appoint an agent. So you can get awfully tripped up by the various terminologies from one state to the other. But a conservator deals with finances, just at least as far as we define it here in Wisconsin.
Well, here we are about out of time, and I want to thank you both, Ellen and Ben, for being with us today. And I get the nice thing is there's so much good information that we have links to them on our page, to the forms themselves, to talking with family. I mean, it's a broad range, and if there's something that isn't covered, there are sites that are mentioned that you can go to for more information. So
absolutely, Larry, and Ellen's site at the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership is a real good clearinghouse for information locally, statewide, and nationally for people.
Well, I want to thank you both again. Sorry, Ellen, go ahead.
Oh, no, that's okay. I just wanted to say, I mean, we are based in the Fox Valley, but we are connected with advanced care planning professionals throughout the state. And so we know that this is a complicated process, especially throwing in the legal documents. And so support and resources are here to help and to help make it less complicated. So feel free to come to our site, check it out. And we can also guide folks, you know, back to another local resource if needed to. But we really want to try to have that consistent language, because we understand that it's complex, but so incredibly important. So thank you for the opportunity to share our messages today.
Yeah, thanks, Ellen, and thank you, Ben. Appreciate it very much. Ben Adams, attorney with McCarty Law Office in Appleton, and Ellen Koski is executive director of Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership. They know a lot, and they're doing wonderful work, and I thank them for the work that they do on your behalf and on my behalf as well, for that matter. Well, women undergoing treatment for lung cancer may also experience sexual health changes. And we're going to be talking about that next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.